This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Cholera, measles, dengue, and malaria are circulating in several states. And a combination of any of these with severe acute malnutrition can be lethal.
That's WHO representative in Sudan, Nima Said Abid, on how displacement, disease, and hunger has become a deadly brew in Sudan. Details coming up. Also, Britain's King Charles III and wife Camilla are in Kenya for a four-day visit. And Washington has removed four African countries from its AGOA program. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres today said he is growing alarmed by the intensifying conflict between Israel and Hamas. In a statement, he said the intensification included Israel's growth ground operations in the Gaza Strip, as well as increasing Hamas rocket attacks on Israel. The United Nations, the United States, and other countries are pressing for a pause in the fighting to let humanitarian aid into Gaza. More than half of Gaza's 2.3 million Palestinians have fled their homes, with hundreds of thousands sheltering in schools or hospitals. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says more than 8,500 people have died since fighting began on October 7th, when Hamas militants attacked several Israeli communities. More than 1,400 people in Israel have been killed, most of them civilians, slain in the initial Hamas attack. In addition, the militant fighters took more than 230 hostages from Israel into Gaza. Israeli soldiers yesterday freed one of the captives, a female Israeli soldier. Netanyahu also urged the international community to demand that the hostages abducted should be freed immediately and unconditionally. Also today, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken testified in the U.S. Senate that the Biden administration is pushing to get at least 108 trucks into Gaza today. Israel has blockaded the enclave and its residents are short of food, fuel, and medical supplies. United Nations officials say hundreds of trucks a day are needed. Blinken also said there are about 400 Americans and their family members trapped in Gaza, and the U.S. government is working hard to help them leave. At the same Senate hearing, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said he has made clear to Israel leaders that they must protect civilians in Gaza. Reporter Linda Gradstein is closely monitoring the situation from Jerusalem. We spoke with her earlier today about the latest developments. First, let's talk about Netanyahu's remarks that he will not agree to a cessation of hostilities.
He has said that the goal is to eradicate the Hamas military power. That fighting has continued. Israeli troops and tanks have pushed further into Gaza. We have reports just a few minutes ago, by the way, of two developments. One is that two Israeli soldiers were killed in that fighting, and the other is that in an Israeli airstrike in northern Gaza, 40 members of a family were apparently killed, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry, in a direct hit on a residential building.
And Netanyahu was the big news. Like yesterday, he was also asked whether he would step down as prime minister over Israel's defense and intelligence failure ahead of the Hamas attack.
Yes, he said the only people who will resign will be Hamas will resign. He has said he does not intend to resign. There are, however, growing calls from across the Israeli political spectrum, including quite a few former Netanyahu supporters. While the heads of the intelligence and the former chief of staff have taken responsibility before the real catastrophe of what happened on October 7th, when thousands of Hamas gunmen breached the border from Gaza and really took over 20 Israeli communities, and have said, you know, I am responsible for this, for whatever happened. Netanyahu has said only that there will be an investigation and everyone will have to give answers, including me, but he has pointedly not taken responsibility for his role. He also, but I think there is a growing sentiment that he will not be able to stay in office. But at the same time, what he said and what a lot of people do say is that in the middle of a war is not the time to have these conversations. It's after the war ends, whenever that will be.
And lastly, Linda, how about Gaza? You know, citizens there left without access to clean running water, food, medical supplies. Even the internet, I understand, is out, or is it back?
No, the internet now is back, although it's quite weak. You know, I've tried to do, Zoom interviews with, contacts and friends in Gaza, and the internet is just not strong enough to support it. But it is back somewhat, and phones are working again. Over the weekend, Israel apparently cut off everything. Israel is allowing more aid into southern Gaza. It has told all the residents of northern Gaza that they should flee south. And there are something like 50 trucks between yesterday and today. However, human rights organizations say that several hundred trucks are needed. And Israel continues not to allow fuel into Gaza, saying that fuel can be used by Hamas to fire rockets. So it will not allow fuel in. It also says that Hamas has stockpiles of fuel, and people should, if they need fuel, should go to Hamas. However, recently, a few hours ago, Antony Blinken said that as far as the United States and Israel know, none of the humanitarian aid that's gotten into Gaza so far has been taken by Hamas. So I think there is a sense that Israel is going to allow more aid to come in. However, the situation in Gaza continues to be desperate. And as the Israeli ground invasion advances, you know, which is backed by an air invasion, it seems, you know, almost inevitable that there will be more Palestinian civilians killed as there were today.
That was journalist Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. She spoke with me by phone about 2 hours ago. Some military experts say a ground offensive by Israel in Gaza will result in even more deaths for both sides. Israel's military will face a type of urban warfare that it has not seen in 9 years since the last ground invasion in 2014, which spanned 50 days and left 72 Israelis and 2,251 Palestinians dead. This time, the presence of more than 220 hostages reported to be kept in Hamas's underground tunnels may complicate things even further. Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed the war scenarios in Gaza with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shinawi.
This time, the Israeli army will need to accept a much higher blood toll. For the time being, there were about 1,500 Israeli civilians killed, and currently there are, as you said, about 220 or more still held as hostages by Hamas. And what is of significance is that this figure is much higher than that of any Israeli war casualties in any war since the 1950s, with the exception of Yom Kippur War 1973. So compared with these 1,500 or 1,700 civilians, with currently 315 killed soldiers, the Israeli population really expects its military to protect it. And it failed. And after now such a high number of killed civilians, the Israeli army needs to take a much higher risk to eliminate the Hamas terrorists. And this is what the Israeli population expects. So my assessment is that the Israelis will push through with their plans, even with higher losses of soldiers, and even accept a higher risk for the lives of the hostages. Regarding the domestic impact of such a bloody campaign, I am sure that after the failure of the Israeli defense on October 7, Benjamin Netanyahu is politically dead anyway. So the future after the war is a future without Netanyahu.
Some other military experts argue that during 2014 Gaza war, Israeli troops troops were trapped and killed in tunnels while trying to target Hamas. At present, there are unverified reports that the Israeli military has targeted the tunnels in northwestern Gaza by deploying a powerful type of bomb known as bunker busters. The use of the bunker busters, therefore, would allow Israeli army to attack Hamas from a distance without risking their own forces. Your thoughts?
Well, the Israelis had about 10 years to study the challenges and their shortfalls during the 2014 war. To be honest, I would be surprised if they did not learn the lesson. The army is considered as one of the most innovative worldwide. Even the Americans are learning from them. And they will not fight the 2014 war again. They use sophisticated technologies like space sensors and ground-penetrating sensors and human intelligence to map the tunnels. So I guess they have a quite good understanding of the tunnel system. And yes, they use and will use also in the future bunker buster bombs to hit the tunnels. But not only these ones. They use bombs with a delayed action fuse, and those are part of their arsenal to penetrate several meters into the ground before exploding, triggering small localized earthquakes that can collapse entire tunnel systems. And I'm sure they will also use other high-tech means to deal with the tunnels, whatever this might be. And if all this works, these times the tunnels might become even a trap for Hamas.
But Israeli forces said they liberated an Israeli hostage who gave them intelligence information to be used against the tunnels.
Well, the Israelis are conducting intelligence-driven operations. This means they are planning step by step based on the overall picture of the tunnel system and based on current intelligence they are receiving from people they are getting out of the tunnels and even from prisoners of war. So yes, they are using current intelligence to penetrate deeper into the tunnel systems. But as I've said, I guess they will not just step into the tunnels and walk right into a trap. They will use some sophisticated, whatever this may be, high-tech means to reconnoiter inside the tunnels and to get after Hamas.
That was Wolfgang Poshtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. UN soldiers today left a camp in the strategic town of Kidal in Mali's volatile north, which has been racked by extremist and separatist violence. This, according to sources in the peacekeeping mission, who spoke with the French news agency AFP. Following a coup in 2020, Mali's new military rulers in June ordered the peacekeepers out, proclaiming their mission was a failure. The United Nations Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission in Mali, MINUSMA, whose strength has hovered around 15,000 soldiers and police officers, has seen 180 of its members killed. The original plan was for the force to withdraw by the end of the year, but the UN troops began leaving their compounds as early as July. The pullout takes place during a renewal of hostilities and on what are perceived to be restrictions imposed by the authorities on MINUSMA's ability to maneuver. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. U.S. President Joe Biden is getting ready to drop Uganda, Gabon, Niger, and the Central African Republic from a special U.S.-Africa trade program called the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. Ambassador J. Peter Pham, distinguished fellow at the Atlantic Council and former U.S. Special Envoy to the Sahel region, says the four countries are being expelled from AGOA for one or more reasons.
When Congress legislated and created the African Growth and Opportunity Act, the AGOA system of trade preferences for sub-Saharan Africa, there are three criteria written into the law with broad bipartisan support. One was the country had to be making reforms toward a market economy, liberalization, and transparency. Secondly, the country had to respect the rule of law, including, obviously, not having unconstitutional changes of government and not carrying out human rights abuses. And thirdly, the country should not be undermining U.S. foreign policy interests or national security. So those are the three criteria for eligibility. This is not a trade agreement. This is a trade concession of benefits to African countries, allowing them to export goods without tariffs. And that gives them a heads up advantage. In Gabon and Niger, because they had unconstitutional changes of government, it goes with the recognition by the State Department that their coups have taken place. Central African Republic, the human rights abuses, including those carried out with the implicit and sometimes explicit sanction of the government by the Wagner group and other Russian mercenaries, is well documented by human rights groups. And then Uganda, following upon the advisory put out by the State Department about its anti-LGBTQ plus legislation that was signed into law earlier this year.
A law that imposes the death penalty on people found guilty of engaging in certain same-sex acts.
Yeah.
But this is a big deal for these countries, right, to be dropped from AGOA?
Well, in absolute terms, perhaps not as big, but certainly in reputational terms, it's a big deal. For example, the Central African Republic exports to the United States less than $1 million worth of goods a year. So really, even with tariffs slapped on, I don't think it's going to affect the surrounding area in terms of international trade. Likewise, the Gabon, perhaps bigger. I mean, there we're dealing with last year about $220 million worth of exports to the U.S. Niger, again, large sum, but not that big, about $73 million. Uganda, it's up there with Gabon, about $174 million worth of exports to the U.S. But I think for these countries, much more importantly, is the signal it sends that you've been removed from a system of trade preferences. You're somehow, if you will, no longer have the good housekeeping seal of approval.
Some of the countries that we have not talked about were expelled before: Burkina Faso, Mali, Guinea. Why were they dropped?
Again, unconstitutional changes of government. They all had coups, which, raises an interesting issue. Congress and AGOA was passed back in the Clinton administration, renewed in the Bush administration, renewed in the Obama administration, and in fact is up for renewal next year in the U.S. Congress with wide, broad bipartisan support. But Congress had a consensus on three criteria: market reforms, not engage a rule of law, and certainly not having coups. But the third one is the one that I think bears a bit of looking at, which is the one that Congress insists that the countries that benefit from this should not do anything that undermines U.S. foreign policy interests or national security.
That's Ambassador J. Peter Pham, a distinguished fellow at the Atlantic Council's Africa Center. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thousands of supporters greeted South Africa's rugby team, the Springboks, at the O.R. Tambo International Airport in Johannesburg today. The team was returning from France, where it won the Rugby World Cup for a record fourth time with a 12-11 victory over New Zealand in the final. President Cyril Ramaphosa has described the team's victory as the hope of the nation. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The screams, ululation, whistling and shouts of joy were deafening when the Springboks players entered the arrivals hall today with the trophy in hand. Many supporters showered the team with praise, saying they had made South Africa proud. Deboho Masilo is one of the supporters who came early in the morning to see the trophy in person.
I'm very excited, guys, to be at O.R. Tambo to welcome the boys, the Bokkies. I'm so excited. I can't wait to see them again in the next World Cup. Thank you.
Stefan Nibu came with his friends to say thank you to the Springboks players.
Oh, I'm very excited. Got a big heart for the Bokke, so seeing them live was absolutely astonishing.
Sandile Mathebula, another Springboks supporter, praised the nation for uniting behind the team.
It felt good. Seeing something so coming that you normally see on TV so up and close and personal, it feels good. And it's here on our home soil, yet again. It feels good, really good. I can't express the words, but it feels really good to see the cup up close and personal.
In his address to the nation yesterday, President Cyril Ramaphosa said the Springboks win was a symbol of hope and a lesson that a united nation can achieve a lot. Ramaphosa gave the whole country a gift for the win.
I'm declaring Friday, the 15th of December, 2023, as a public holiday. We declare this to be a day of hope, a day of celebration and unity.
He emphasized that the team had marketed the country so well and put it on the international stage. Starting Thursday, the team will tour different cities to present the trophy to the nation and thank the fans for their support. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The World Health Organization warns that disease outbreaks, malnutrition and non-communicable diseases are rising in war-torn Sudan with devastating consequences for millions of people. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Since conflict erupted April 15th, more than 4.6 million people have become displaced inside Sudan. This number, added to the more than 3 million who already were displaced within the country before the conflict, makes Sudan home to the world's largest internally displaced crisis. The World Health Organization warns the health system in Sudan is stretched to the breaking point and does not have the capacity to deal with the mounting health needs afflicting this enormous, vulnerable population. WHO representative in Sudan, Nima Saeed Abid, speaking from Port Sudan today, says health care is limited. Because of insecurity, he says 70 to 80% of health facilities are non-functional in conflict hotspots. He told journalists that displacement and shortages of medicines and medical supplies are placing millions of Sudanese at risk of severe illness or death from preventable and treatable causes.
Mass displacement have driven the population further into a state of widespread malnutrition, with the lives of children hanging in the balance. Cholera, measles, dengue, and malaria are circulating in several states, and a combination of any of these with severe acute malnutrition can be lethal.
WHO reports 3.4 million Sudanese children under 5 are acutely malnourished, and 700,000 are suffering from severe acute malnutrition, which can lead to death. Abid says outbreaks of cholera have been declared in Gedaref, Khartoum, and South Kordofan states, with suspected cases reported from Al Jazeera and Kassal states.
And there is possibility of further expansion because of the quality of water supply, because of the sanitation, and because of displacement, and the healthcare system in Sudan now is really at the breaking point. So for all these reasons, we are expecting that we may see more state affected, more people affected.
As of last week, WHO reports 1,962 suspected cholera cases, with 30 lab-confirmed cases and 72 associated deaths. It estimates more than 3.1 million people are at risk of cholera until the end of December. Abid says WHO has deployed 14 rapid response teams into the affected areas. He says WHO has stockpiled drugs and essential supplies for the treatment of cholera patients and is getting ready to receive oral cholera vaccines. Lisa Schlein, VOA News, Geneva.
An elite Kenyan police unit has gone on trial on charges of wrongful death in the death of an outspoken Pakistani journalist in Nairobi a year ago. The hearing started today at a court on the outskirts of Kenya's capital. Arshad Sharif was killed October 23, 2022, when the car he was in with another Pakistani man sped up and drove through a roadblock checkpoint and police opened fire. Nairobi police at the time said it was a case of mistaken identity during a search for a similar car involved in a child abduction case. His widow and two Kenyan unions have filed the lawsuit. They accuse Kenyan authorities of failing to prosecute officers. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Vandi, and our engineer, Zainab Abdurrahman, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.